Good morning. Welcome to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show on this Saturday morning. I'm Captain Mickey Eastman. Producing the Outdoor Show is Jace. Our sponsors today, Allied Industrial Sales Incorporated, Liquid Shield RV Roofing, Belleville Meat Market, Mainstream Marketing, Angler U, and Boyd's One Stop. All right, looking at weather. Galveston, 69 on the island this morning. A little cooler today, a lot drier, and looks like today, sunny skies with a high of 76, east-southeast winds 10 to 20. There's not much wind right now, I can assure you that. And then for tonight, clear skies with a low of 68, south 10 to 15. And then for tomorrow, sunny skies, high of 77, south 15 to 25. So southerly wind's going to return again. But anyway, looking at tides for today, these are Galveston Channel tide predictions. We have four of them, and we have a high coming up at 5:34 a.m. It's a 1.4, then a low at 11:24 a.m., a 1.0, then a high at 4:05 p.m., a 1.2, and then a low at 10:53 p.m., an 0.2. So kind of a weak schedule there, not much movement between exchanges. You'd think it'd be stronger with this full moon. 6:56 a.m. sunrise, 7:44 p.m. sunset. And our moon phase is 98%, and it's almost like having three full moons. We have 99% tomorrow night and Monday night. And looking at current conditions right now around the complex, as far as wind goes, looks like offshore it's northeast at 7, Galveston Channel northeast at 1, Eagle Point northeast at 6, and up at Morgan's Point, the top end of the complex, northeast at 3. So winds are light and variable. All the water temperatures are running from about 72 to 73 degrees, right back where we started, picking up the water temps after that last front. All right, let's run over to Sabine and check in with Captain Bill Watkins this morning and see what's up. Good morning, Bill. How you doing?
I'm doing okay, buddy.
All right.
Looks like,
good to hear.
Looks like life is good.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you what, Thursday was a great day. We caught trout the size that I hadn't been catching.
Good.
Now we had several in a 3-pound class and one mm-hmm. that was definitely a 4-pounder and lost one at the boat that was probably 5 or 6 pounds.
That's
a fish I haven't seen in a while.
Yes.
But they're tide runners. I know they're tide runners. Big, strong, powerful, silvery fish.
Right.
chasing bait in a tide that was dropping so fast that it was like a rushing river. I mean.
Yeah, last Wednesday when I fished, that was a big deal, was that tide was falling out so hard and so fast. Boy, it was just stirring all the water up.
Yeah, it did that too. I mean, it fell a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It was going out pretty strong when we got there right before daylight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, within 2 hours, it had fallen enough that, you know, you could see reefs that you don't normally see. And it did dirty up the water. But the water color was right at daylight, that watercolor was okay. You could see down about 6 or 8 inches, and it had a darker color to it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Those fish lit off. I mean, it was good. So, yeah, we wound up catching, 22 trout. I think we had maybe a couple of 13 and a halves in there, but the rest of them were all Texas size.
Yeah.
So it was a good morning. And boy, those fish were strong in that current.
Yeah, that makes a difference.
You had to be careful or you'd tear them off. But it was good. And up till about 10 o'clock, we still caught one here and there. You know, but that water was dirtying up like that. It was forcing them off that shallow reef and the little ditch they were in.
Yeah.
It was only 3 foot deep in that ditch from the get-go.
Right.
And it fell down to about 2.5, then 2, and they left. You could still pick up one every once in a while, but, you know, the real school of fish was gone. They bailed off into that deeper water.
And you were catching them fish right over, were you catching them over any shell or just mud bottom or what?
Oh, it was shell. Totally. Yeah, hard, hard shell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and I talked to a friend of mine later in the morning. He said, man, we were catching them on chicken on a chain. That's all we could catch them on. And I said, well, we caught them on white eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I said, there's no such thing as only one color you can catch them on, but they'll definitely show a preference. And I think it's all about visibility myself.
Yeah, you know? Visibility and just being on them is the main thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If you're not on them, you're not on them.
That's it.
We caught one trout further up the channel, closer to the bridge, and that was the only trout up there. He was a good one. You know, brave soul that, you know, kind of followed that high tide up there. And then we did hook up to 4 oversized reds, 2 undersized reds, and a nice 22-inch black drum, which I think really tastes better than redfish myself. They're not as bloody.
No, they're not.
But he was really clean, didn't have any bugs in.
No worms.
Yeah, we threw that one in the chest. Couldn't get a red to keep.
Yeah, once they get up in that 7-pound, maybe a little bigger range, they fill up with them old worms.
Yeah, they do. If you can find one that's, you know, down around 20 inches, I've eaten many one of them. They're good.
Yeah.
There's about like sheep head. I do not like fish for sheep head, but, you know, if we catch one who's big enough, he's going in the box.
Right.
Because they are a delicacy, but it's hard to clean. You got to have special weapons and tactics to clean one of those. I mean, it takes a good bread knife. I guess you could clean them with an electric knife, but I don't know how you do it. Get one of those that's got a Sawzall blade on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, an adaptive fishing fillet blade.
Mini chainsaw.
Sawzall.
Yeah. Well,
I've seen one of those. That was an amazing tool. It was a 20-volt electric, battery operated.
Yeah.
And they had modified it to put fish fillet blades on. And that thing would eat a redfish.
Sure. Cut through a tube before with it, no problem.
Yeah, have you ever seen one of those?
I saw a video amazing. Of one.
Yeah, shoot.
I see a lot more sheep head on the table these days. Times have changed. You know, 10 years ago, you wouldn't see a picture of a sheep head. Now they're they're rock stars for a lot of guides now.
They are.
Drum and sheep head.
They are. If I catch a drum, but, you know, me, I'm an artificial guy. That's all I'm going to do. But if I catch a drum, and he's good, he's going in the box. But, you know, I guess I'm kind of a trout and redfish purist. If I had a flounder to catch, I'd catch one.
Right.
But they're kind of rare over here. I think maybe they'll make a comeback. Louisiana's doing some good studies on those things. They at least recognize they had a problem. So hopefully something will come out of that. But right now, there's just not. I mean, last year I had a couple of days in May that, wow, boy, we caught, you know, 14 or 16 flounder. And it was like, whoa, man, this is so cool. And then after the bank got swept, they weren't there anymore.
Yeah.
So I don't know what to think about that. But
much action going on in those jetties yet?
It's been so tough weather-wise. Yeah. I didn't go out there, but I eventually will. When everything gets right and I get a pretty good high tide out there, that's when I'm going to strike. And they'll be there. Oh, yeah. I know there's a lot of other guys waiting, too, pawing the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's a captive audience out there when you got those fish up on the jetties.
Right.
But it's one of the most.
That's a big trap run early June, you know, late May, early June, man. They get, you know, if you get the conditions where, you know, the wind lays down, you get some green water out there, those fish go nuts.
They go nuts. And they'll be swarming up there. And it's a target-rich environment, but it is a tough place to fish when it's not just right.
Right.
If you got a light southeast wind pushing that green water up on those rocks, you're the first one that gets out to the good spots, you know, and there's several spots up and down those jetty rocks where they'll be. Both the Texas and Louisiana side. And you just gamble and hit the first one and be ready to go if they're not there. Move on out. You know, I always start somewhere around the middle and around a boat cut and go from there. But there's days that green water will be up on that, what we call the high rocks on the end.
Yeah.
And that first run out there is the one you want to hit. Oh, my goodness. You can get into some 4 and 5 pound trout out there.
Just, no doubt. Oh, all right, man. Let me do this break, Bill. I'll come right back at you, buddy. Hang with me.
All right.
All right. Well, hey, anglers, you ready to hook into something big? It's time for the Matagorda Slam Fishing Tournament. That's happening Friday, April 25th down in Matagorda, Texas. They're kicking things off Thursday night on the 24th. Join us at the captain's meeting in Calcutta, dinner at Rusty Hook Ranch, Rudy's Barbecue, cold drinks, and a chance to get in on the action before the lines even hit the water. And then it's game on the next morning, safe light launch Friday morning, weigh in from 2 to 4 p.m. at the Matagorda Harbor. Bring your A game, your best team, and your lucky rods. Entry is just $400 per team. And here's the best part. Your entry includes all-you-can-eat crawfish on Saturday at the legendary Matagorda Slam Crawfish Cook-Off. Proceeds benefit the Hookspit Junior Anglers Association, helping get more kids on the water and into the great outdoors. Spots are filling fast, so register today, matagordaslam.com. That's matagordaslam.com, and get ready to slam. Good morning. Welcome back to the Outdoor Show. It is 4:18 here in the Bayou City. All right, Bill, we are back, my friend.
Well, I'm back with you, buddy.
All right.
Right here. Trotting along, trying to keep this horse's nose up.
Yes.
This early in the morning. That's no different than what I do when I get up and go fishing. You know, it's just it's a kind of a way of life. I almost wake up automatically at 4 o'clock, maybe 3:30, somewhere right in there. I'm my internal clock's just gonna wake me up.
I know. So, I do that on my days off when I'm not here. I'm wanting to sleep in. You know, I'll go, all right, I get to sleep all night tonight, and I'll wake up about 2 o'clock and go, oh man, I got to get to work.
I know.
I've actually jumped up and thinking it's a work day and run in and start making a cup of coffee and go, you know what? I'm off today. I'm going back to bed. It's crazy how your your clock gets like that. Get all out of whack.
Yeah, you just get used
sometimes,
to doing it.
Yeah, sometimes I don't know whether I'm coming or going, man.
That's not too much of an age thing either. That's just training.
Yeah, that's just crazy. Oh well.
Yeah.
Could be worse. Could be under the dirt.
Yeah.
Don't want to end up under the dirt pattern.
Well, I tell you, sometimes I think that old people, they wear out, and almost it's like, okay, I'm ready to go out now.
I can see it. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we're just like vehicles. You only got so many miles on you.
That's right. You do. And my cousin brought a ruler, one of those tape measures, job site tape measure. Mm-hmm. Brought it to the last, it was his birthday back in August. And we were up at Powell Park, and he took that ruler out and run it out to 75. And he said, now, most people croak over about 75. He said, so then he extended it on out, and he said, now, how much time do you really have left? So that's when you look at it like that on a ruler.
Yeah.
It's an impact that you won't forget. I got to thinking about it, and I went, dang, that's not many inches.
No, it's not. It'll wake you up and go, wow.
Yeah. I'd ever seen anybody relate an age to a ruler, you know. And there it is. Most people start passing off somewhere around 70, 75, and then right on out there, you know, then you get to 80, and you are on borrowed time then.
Yeah, you are. You just never know, man.
Yeah. It's like the
old Lonesome Dove quote, it's been a hell of a party, Woodrow.
It has indeed.
A nice ride.
Yes.
I was fishing with a couple of my buddies the other day, and we were talking about all the fish we had caught together over the years. And just, memories are, that's good stuff.
Yeah, it is good
they
stuff.
They can't take that away from you.
Nope. No, that's right.
And riding around looking at the bay and looking at how things have changed just in the last 10 years, not to mention the last 50.
It's changed quite a bit.
I mean, I'm shrinking up my way, you know, on those, on all those channel bays and all that area. I mean, all the islands they're building, filling them with spoil and from all the dredging projects. And we're losing 100 acres here, 200 acres there. I mean, it's adding up. You can really see it now.
Yeah.
It's changed everything with the currents and the silt and just, it's kind of strange. Really.
How much of Galveston Bay do you think still has oysters enough to
20% of what they had?
20%.
20% of what they used to have.
And they were always such good oysters, too.
Oh, we fed the whole world. I mean, it just, everybody got their oysters from Galveston. All up the East Coast, I mean, all of that. They just, you know, to hear some of the stories, you know, Hillman and his dad have told me over the years, you know, they've been in the oyster business as long as anybody. And it's just, man, it's so detrimental. It's unbelievable. It changes things when you lose 80% of your bottom habitat. That's a big change.
My dad and I used to go to Smith Point on a hard norther.
Mm-hmm.
And We knew the tide level was going to drop like crazy, and we would wait around out there and pick up oysters. I mean, big oysters. And we would we'd put them in the back of our car in two tubs, two big right. wash tubs, and put them in there and take them to the house and chuck them out. And, oh, man, that was worth doing. I don't even know if you can do that anymore.
Man, I don't know if there's enough to do that. I'm sure there is. You'd really have to work for it. You know, it's like in the winter we'd go down to my Uncle Jimmy's. He had a couple of houses there on Demijohn Island, and we'd take his boat, and he kept it in the slip behind his house, and we'd mix up all of our red sauce and everything ahead of time, you know, horseradish and ketchup, and head to Rattlesnake Point on a low tide and pull that boat up on the reef, and we'd get out with our buckets and pick our oysters up and then go back to the boat and lean over the boat and shuck those and eat them right there on the reef.
Hey, that's as good as it gets, buddy.
You don't get any better. And, I mean, they were good and salty. I mean, just pristine, plump. That was as good as it gets right there, buddy.
Oh, man. Yeah. A little bit of work, and you have to have a glove. I mean, you know, we'd wear an old cloth glove
on our hand. All of us had a good oyster knife and a good glove, and now you can get after it. You learn how to do them, you can shuck them real quick.
First ones we did, we shucked them with a big bladed screwdriver.
Oh, yeah. That get all them pieces of shell in there. And
that was difficult.
Makes them a little crunchy.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't hear you say anything about redfish. Where's all y'all's redfish at all of a sudden?
Well, we caught four oversized.
Oversized, yeah.
And two undersized, 17ers.
I'm hearing a lot of that, right? Well, it's either they're undersized or they're oversized. Not hearing about a lot of slots.
And some of my customers, the ones that like them, they're really sad about Louisiana giving up, you know, that one a day.
28,
oversized.
27.
Yeah, one over 27. So that's kind of a sad deal for those that like to do that. They like to put them on the half shell.
Yeah, grill them.
Yeah, and they're just really good like that. I remember the first time my dad and I did one of those. It was a bull red. That thing must have been 38 inches long. And we heard about it, and we worked on it. Practically had to have a hatchet to clean it, and we put that thing on the hot coals, and man, you talk about, we decided that we'd be looking for them, and we got that buttered and seasoned and put all on there, and shucks, stood right there at the grill and ate it, but then. You know, my wife will not eat a redfish that's pulled off the skin. Something about it bothers her. And I don't have that problem. I'm not squeamish about much of anything, but they're really good like that. I understand.
All that scales the skin does is act like aluminum foil, you know? Just lay it down on there and you just, shovel it out of that hide. That's good, man. I think what makes that so good, you know how redfish will have that layer of fat between the skin and the meat, and it cooks through.
Yeah.
You know, when you put it on the fire like that, it cooks through into the meat itself. That's why it's so moist, and it just adds a really unique flavor to it.
Yeah, it does. I mean, there's a... I don't know why anybody wouldn't want to eat that. But
yeah, it's hard to dry them out, you know, when you cook them that way with the half shell on them like that.
Yeah, I love it like that, but don't get to do it around here much.
Man, our old fish are so good that it's hard to mess them up. Even if you don't know how to cook, it's very difficult to mess them up.
And I have heard so many recipes about how you can cook those things.
Oh, yeah.
There's lemon pepper and Tony's and Chef Paul Prudhomme's Black and Redfish Magic and lots of butter on all the recipes.
Butter and bacon. Onion, butter, and bacon. Yeah. You can make everything taste good.
One of the ways I heard to do it, and I hadn't tried this, is put the meat side down on the grill and get some good grill marks on it. Mm-hmm. And then when you flip it over, cook it the rest of the time with the skin side down. And I thought about that, and it stands to reason that that would be really good.
But wonder how you keep it from tearing off, when you go to flip it, keep it from sticking to the grill. I guess you'd have to spray it down with Pam or something, huh?
Yeah, that's what they told me. They sprayed it down with Pam. And just flipped it over there on one side, and it takes a couple of spatulas to do it right.
I got you.
You get under there, or a big one, and get under there and scrape it up, and then flip it over and scale side down and cook it the rest of the way.
All right, Bill.
That's something.
You done made me hungry, and, man, I just got started here. Throw out a number. Somebody wants to come over and fish with you over at Sabine Lake, buddy.
409-673-9211, and that'll get you there.
All right, Bill. Have a good weekend. Take care, my friend.
You too, buddy.
All right, later. All right. Well, I need to take a moment to tell everyone about the Belleville Meat Market. They're easy to find right in downtown Belleville. Check out their smoked sausage samples. Those are available daily in the store with a full menu of pecan smoked barbecue served Monday through Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., and check out their bulk pricing available on their fresh ground beef and all their pecan smoked sausage. And while you're at it, check out their, this is for a week only, a half-calf special custom processing, $4.39 a pound. You can order now. Call the processing department at 979-232-2284. And plus, they're introducing their new Chuck Wagon patties, half-pound beef patties seasoned with cheddar cheese. Ooh, you talk about good. And their wild game processing facility, open year-round. Check out their new sausage recipe. You got to try it. It's really good. While you're at it, get deer tamales, venison hot dogs made. Your family will love that you did. The Belleville celebrating over 42 years serving the greater Houston community. That's the Belleville Meat Market, where meat is our middle name. Good morning. Welcome back to the Sports Radio 610 Outdoor Show. All right, let's run up the Conroe. Let's check in with old Richard Tosh, the fish dude, this morning, see what he's up to. Hey, Richard, good morning. How are you, man?
I'm good, Mickey. How about yourself?
Oh, I'm good, brother. I'm good.
Good deal. It cooled down a little bit, though.
Yeah, we did get a little cool down overnight.
I know, it's crazy. That north wind just barely blew yesterday, but it blew enough to cool everything down a little bit.
Yep.
But, I mean, that's fine, too, because it gets supposed to get up into the 80s again, so that ain't nothing wrong with that. And them, it's got, these fish are going pretty good right now. So, and I talked to some guys yesterday that were catching some catfish on the bulkhead, so I think that's what I'm going to try today. I don't know what happened with the day, but I had three or four people wanting to go, but nobody ever committed, so foot on it. Get my wife and I, and we'll go out there and we'll do some bulkhead catfishing.
There you go.
See how them rascals. See how them rascals do,
baby.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Can't
beat it. You had a nice batch of crappie yesterday.
Yes, sir. Got a good limit out of it. That was nothing wrong with that. That's one of the first limit of fish I've had since COVID. That's what's crazy of crappie anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's they've been having such a hard time, but at least I think that grass has got a lot to do with them coming back. So. It's a good thing. And plus, at least some people are starting to try to leave them alone during the spawn, and that's the main thing. As long as they continue to get a good spawn out of them every year, they should be all right. Because we bounced around to several different brush piles yesterday, just kind of checking everything out. Mm-hmm. And I told him, I said, we're gonna catch a few off of here, a few off of there, a few off of here. Everywhere we go, I just want to see what's on each one of them. And we pulled up to several of them that had a lot of small ones. I actually caught one that was probably about 4 inches long. So there's, you know, they had a good spawn at some point, and then had some more that were around 6 inches long and
dang
8 inches, and also had a good variety in the size, and then caught a lot of those that were 1.5 pounds and up. So there's nothing wrong with that at all. I mean, we had some really good, nice fish in the bunch, and you know, just like I told that fellow yesterday, I said, man, we're gonna look. I want to look, see what's there. And I had some nice brim too. I mean, we had a pretty good mess of brim that we caught. So you can't complain about that, I guarantee you.
No.
Those rascals, you know, we even got to talk about them. You know, when we was a kid growing up, you used to talk about catching brim that bigger than your hand. But on Conroe, there's some giants out there. They're bigger than your hand. Most of them, especially when you're scoping them, you look at that brush pile and go, that's a bunch of crappie right there. And you'd catch one of them and be just a big old brim. I mean, he's just as thick as he can be. But that's the thing. And several of the brush piles I run across yesterday, you know, we fished everything from 8 foot all the way up to about 18 foot deep, just trying to check and see where the bigger ones were, where the small ones were. Just like I say, just looking. And I just hit several different brush piles, different locations throughout the lake. We probably hit 8 or 10 different brush piles, just kind of looking around. And they never really hit anything hard, but we just, you know, like I say, just got out there and just plucked away at them. And, you know, I could have sat on one brush pile and limited out on one brush pile, but I just wanted to kind of see what was going on with them and what the different depth ranges they were. And what's funny is most of the smaller ones seem to be in about the 15, 16 foot range. The bigger ones all seem to be anywhere from the 8 to 12 foot range.
Yeah, they're just leaving the shorelines, and they're probably hitting those first brush piles at that depth before they get, you know, all the way deep, you know.
That's it. That's what I was kind of thinking.
Thing, you know, Randy Dearman was telling me.
You know,
he's catching some pretty nice ones.
Good. I mean, I'll tell you what, Rayburn's so full of them, though, it's unreal. And it's crazy how there's so much bigger crappie over there than there are on Conroe. Because you can go over
COVID
the Rayburn.
Kind of hurt them a little bit, too, like you were talking about. I mean, they're starting to come back. You know, it's getting better now. They're catching up again.
Right.
But boy.
You know, and that's
COVID.
I'll tell you what, gets
toll on the crappie population, man.
It did, you know, and so many people don't understand it, you know, but the big thing is, and I was actually messaging a guy yesterday about the crappie, because he's going to go try to catch some today, and he was asking me about them and stuff like that, and he got talking about, well, so-and-so says they're not up in the shallows yet. Well, if they're up in the shallows, I'm not going to fish for them anyway. I told him, I said, well, they've been up in the shallows since December.
Oh,
and that's... You know, that's typical. They, you know, because we don't get a cold winter, you know, and that's the thing is once that the water temperature will start coming down in December, and then it'll drop to its lowest about mid January or so. But at the end of January, it starts coming back up. So most years, even around Christmas, the water temperature is on its way up, and then it'll take a plunge in January. But as it starts to make that turn up, those crappie move into the shallow water, and that's when they start spawning on Conroe anyway. And then they'll have a little lull in the coldest part in January, but February rolls around, they're right back in that shallow water, and they're working on spawning and stuff like that. And then February, March, they're all up there. And then they, you know, April, that's why I always just wait till April to start fishing for them. Because a lot of them that I'm catching right now is they're full of eggs still, but you know, most people say, well, those are still spawning. No, by this time of year they're not going to spawn out. Those eggs will just dry up and they'll never lay them. So that's, you know, that's another thing that you got to kind of look at. And then like next month I'll start catching some that'll have eggs, and you'll start to notice that they're drying up. They're turning, instead of being a bright yellow, they'll be kind of white looking, and they'll just kind of disappear. And it's, That's just what they do every year, because not every one of them will spawn out every year. And that's, you know, that's just one of the things that I've learned about them over the years. They just all don't, they don't spawn. But they're, like I say, that December to April time frame, or April 1, they're just up there doing their thing, you know. And there's some days that you get up there, and, you know, like I'm bass fishing a lot of these backwaters in December and January and February, and I'll be pushing crappie into some of those shallow areas, because some of the areas that I go into aren't, you know, they're less than 2 foot deep. And as I go in there, I can see all these fish ahead of the boat, because it's fairly clear water. You know, it's not like a mud hole, because when I'm fishing in that shallow stuff that time of year, it's all these kind of protected waters where the bass first start showing up to spawn. You know, it's just, you get back up in the timber and stuff like that, and they, the grass that the shoreline grass, and then the grass that's in the water and stuff, kind of filter it out, so it really makes for some clear water, you know. And that's, I mean, you can literally spot everything. As a matter of fact, about 3 weeks ago, I was up there, maybe it might have been a month ago, but I was up in one of them, and I was pushing, I bet I pushed 50 crappie, 75 crappie back into a spot, and you could even see catfish in there swimming around with them. And this is, you know, less than a foot deep. So, as you know, you get to paying attention to all that stuff, and you go, dang, they're still up here, because there's probably still some up shallow trying to spawn, but for the most part, they're gone. You know, they're going to move out. Now, the bass, they're still hanging up there, you know, doing their thing. But typically on the north end, most of those north end largemouth are done spawning. And you can, you know, I've talked about it before, where the lake kind of goes in stages. You've got the north end that goes first, December, January, February, mid-lake, you know, end of February, March, and April. And then the south end will go, I mean, they'll be spawning all the way down at the dam in May at times. You know, and you'll see them on beds all the way till then. And then after May rolls around, you kind of lose track of them. You can't see them on beds anymore. But occasionally, I mean, you may spot one or two here and there. But for the most part, they move off on the out in the deeper water and stuff, and kind of, you know, you have your fry garters that are up there right now too, and you can always tell, you know, you'll see that fry swimming around in a little small circle, and you'll have those little male bass that are up there protecting them. They're, you know, they're fairly aggressive, so, because they don't want anything eating the fry, so they'll run everything off as they're swimming around. You know, and that's just what they do. They're, you know, they're protective of those fry, trying to give them the best opportunity to survive. And, you know, crappie don't tend to do that, though. You know, I mean, they'll lay their eggs, they'll hang around a little bit, and then they're gone. You know, it's, now brim, them goofy old brim, they hang around when they get up there on them beds like that, and they'll try to run everything off. But the thing is, them dang old bass just eat them. You know, they don't mess around with them. You know, I mean, that's one of them things. But those, you know, the brim are going to start moving up on their beds. Typically, they start about June, July. That's when they really get up there and start spawning real good in the shallower water. I say that, you know, I found brim beds out in 15 foot of water before. So,
oh yeah, you hear a lot of that. That's something you wouldn't think of. All right, Richard. Well, I got to run, my friend. If somebody wants to get with you about coming up to Conroe and wetting a line, give them some info.
All right, Mickey, anyone get in touch with me at 936-661-7920. You can find me on Facebook. Just check out the Fish Dudes Guide Service. You can email me at admin@fishdudetx.com, or just check out the webpage, fishdudetx.com.
All right. Go load up them cats, man. See you, buddy.
Yes, sir. Y'all have fun.
Later. All right. Thanks, Richard.
All right.
Now let's run down Matagorda way. Let's check in with Captain Charlie Paradosky this morning. Charlie P., good morning. What's up, man?
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Another day older.
Yeah, that's it. We're here.
Still hanging on.
That's a good
thing. Ready to fight the elements today.
Yeah, well, it's nice this morning. Real pretty weather this morning.
It was really nice yesterday morning. It was nice and cool, and those fish ate yesterday really good. I don't think I talked to anybody that didn't catch fish yesterday.
That's what I heard.
In both bays.
Right.
Yep. It was nice. Well, the past 2 days have been pretty good, but, you know, we still have these low tides, you know, and it goes out all morning.
Yep.
And it just don't seem to be current, but, you know, it's going out.
Right.
I know one of them went to a deep reef in West Bay yesterday, and well, it was Bink, and he didn't have a bite till 9 o'clock, you know, and they went off big time. Right. But we were in East Bay drifting and pecking on them all day long. They seemed a bit good all day. I know Thursday I turned one loose. It was about 28.
Awesome.
But there's not a lot of them around, I can tell you that.
No, but it's still, that's one good one.
Yeah. And one thing that really puzzles me is these damn redfish. They're in the shallows right now. It's like they're waiting for some tide to come up so they get back in the damn marsh, but they don't want to pull out there in the middle of the bay. You know, piles of them.
They must have plenty of food right next to the bank. That's what I'm hearing.
I guess.
Most of the redfish have been, you know, the ones out deep are the oversized. And then the slots and the undersized are right on the bank, man. They are shallow.
Yeah. And it's especially good in the afternoon. The guys that are waiting in the afternoon are catching a lot of redfish on top waters. But
that's when you get that good incoming tides afternoon.
Yeah. But, I mean, as long as I've been in Matagorda, Mickey, redfish have been a pain in the butt out there in East Bay. And they haven't been for the past year. I'm just not hitting those big schools of reds.
Yeah, I wonder what that's about. I
don't know. Now, there's an abundance of little bitty reds.
Mm-hmm.
Gets them damn things everywhere you go.
Right.
But I don't know. Every year seems to be different. Another challenge. We'll figure it out. I'm sure they'll show up sooner or later. But
they always
trout
do.
Fishing,
you know,
good to meet them.
Yeah. Are. There's so many of them, but, man, they're like ghosts sometimes. They just disappear. And then when you're not looking for them and not really worried about them, then all of a sudden they're everywhere.
Yeah. You know, we've got guys down here that strictly fish for redfish with cut mullet every day with customers.
Yeah.
And you know, they're complaining. You know, they used to be through at 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning. Now they come in at 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. So, well, they're having to grind them out.
Yes, sir.
We know about grinding.
Yeah, we do. We've been grinding for a while.
Well, if you're not willing to grind, you're usually not going to probably catch anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And I haven't been down wade fishing in West Bay yet. I've heard there's some good catches down there. But, well, you know, April's a funny month. You know, you get an early bite and a late bite most of the time down there.
Right.
You know, I don't know if those glass minnows are showing up down there or not, but, you know, that's what we used to do, go late in the afternoon and fish till dark. Get back to the cleaning table at 10 o'clock at night and fight mosquitoes.
Oh, man.
I pass now. We'll do something different.
Not quite that mad at them.
Nope.
Oh, and mosquitoes, man. That's the only throwback to fishing till dark, especially over at Sabine when I used to go over there and hit them big fish right, you know, an hour before dark on into the darkness. And, man, if you're really catching
you let
them
good,
and getting a bunch of big bites, you'll stay and contend with the mosquitoes. But if it's a little bit slow and that sun starts going down, I'm gone. Get this.
Yeah.
get this boat on a trailer and get out of Dodge, buddy. They get bad down
They'll
there.
They'll eat you alive.
Suck you dry.
They will eat you alive. They haven't been bad down here. I noticed yesterday morning there was a few, but, you know, we ain't, hell, we ain't had no rain.
No. I've had a bunch of rain up here, but so far so good. Few mosquitoes, nothing bad. But
yeah, I don't see any rain in sight for next week. Next week, I see a lot of southeast winds.
We're going to have like a 2-week stretch without rain. That's good for me over my way. I don't want any more. We've had plenty.
Yeah.
You guys could use it down y'all's way, but, you know, on the middle coast and hill country, I mean, there's a lot. Look at Canyon Lake, lowest it's ever been. I don't even think there's even a boat ramp open anymore on it.
It's crazy. Unbelievable.
Isn't that nuts?
How about Blaine's? You been getting any rain down there?
They got quite a bit out of that low pressure, you know, that flooded all of the valley. He got quite a bit out of that. Perfect timing again, just like last year. And look what he had. It made a big difference in bird and populations and deer production, everything. So he hit
That's
it
good.
He hit it good again, brother. All right, man. Well, Charlie, somebody wants to call you about coming down and fishing with you. How do they reach you?
Cell phone, 713-725-2401.
All right, my friend. Well, Charlie, have a good weekend. Catch him up, and I'll talk to you next week. You be safe.
Take care, Mickey.
See you, man.
Yes.
You know, folks, with potential tariffs, now's the time to protect your investment. Keep your RV in top shape with LiquiShield RV Roofing Restoration. If your roof is damaged, call Mike, 281-831-7832. LiquiShield restores your RV's roof. It prevents future damage, extends its life, and boosts its value. They come to you. The job's usually done just in one day, and it's backed by a 30-year warranty. So book your appointment today, 281-831-7832. That's 281-831-7832. That's LiquiShield RV Roofing.